All right, so we are going to go backwards. So Josh covered kind of what we read this last week. I'm going to go 1 week further back. So we're going back in time a little bit. So we're going back to Jacob. Now, Jacob, can anybody tell me anything about Jacob? What is he cool for any particular reason?
His name was Kermit Israel.
Yeah. You think he's probably important then? Yeah, because God likes who a lot?
Israel.
Yeah, there you go. See, look at us. We're scientists over here. Bingo. Did anybody else know anything? Like, what stories Jacob's in? What's, I don't know, any... Remember any character traits about him? What kind of person was Jacob? Anybody remember? Was he like super nice all the time and a super good guy always? No, Xavier says no, right? Was he a little skeevy sometimes? Yes, we can all nod. And those of you that didn't read, just start nodding. So I don't have to be right. Okay, so Jacob's an interesting character. We're going to look at him today in a lot of ways. But before I get there, I want to cover why this section of scripture is important. So we've got here... So this is a fancy, super fancy chart here of... And we'll cover this more at some point in time. Sorry. This is a super fancy chart of the timeline of Israel, or I put it as the rise and fall of Israel. Now, we'll talk more about this when we actually kind of do a deep dive on Israel at some point, but I want you to realize, right, so Israel has this kind of rise and fall, right? It starts off down here. Who do you think the start of the nation of Israel starts with? Anybody know?
Abraham.
Why? What was on this board right here for the last 2 weeks? Anybody? Yeah, all the covenant with Abraham, right? So the nation of Israel kind of gets its start right here. Now that's, Bob would call that the formation of Israel. And then also, this point right here is kind of where we're at. So this Abraham was what, 1992? Negative 1990. I'm going to put negative because it feels better than BC, right? Okay. And then so this, we're at like 1739 right now. So... doesn't negative numbers make more sense than BC and AD? I don't know. I think it does. So anyways, this is, we're a couple years, 100 years later now, and so we start off with Abraham, and then Jacob, right, gets turned into the actual name Israel. So it's important because we're officially starting to ramp up the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel is who all of the Old Testament is about. The nation of Israel is really what God's plan revolves around in a lot of ways. We always just think about the church, but you've got to understand the nation of Israel. And so why it's important when you're reading about Jacob and things like that, that is, I mean, we are officially starting to get into the parts of the Bible that are dealing with them, and you want to start paying attention to the nation of Israel. Right? We talk about the nation of Israel. I mean, back in the day, how did you make countries? Like, when there was no countries, how do you make a country? Babies. Right? Like, the nation of Israel gets its name because it's Israel's family. Right? So that's fundamentally, like, we are officially there, y'all. We're starting on Israel. And so... just keep an eye on this, because now we're going to see how it changes from, whereas this is just a guy that kind of knew the Lord and walked with him. Now we're moving to a guy that has, what, 12 kids, right? And that those 12 kids then turn into the 12 tribes, and then those 12 tribes make up the big part of Israel. So this is the formation of the nation of Israel, and so that's all the more we're going to talk about it today, because I don't want to get into it, but... pay attention, because this is kind of interesting. So, Jacob, he was... anybody know what the name Jacob means? Oh, got to restart here. Does anybody know what the name Jacob means? Off the top of your head, outside of the leaders. If you've heard it, like, from Bob. I wouldn't expect you guys to know it. Like, I don't know what the name Jacob means.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to restart, FYI, you Zoom people.
Jared. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't his name get changed to Israel?
It does, yes.
Is that him or no?
Yep, that's him. Do you know what Jacob means?
Okay. Sorry.
Do you know what Jacob means? Were you adding to that, or were you... Luke?
Well, no, I didn't know if that had anything to do with it.
Oh, okay. Yep, it does have something to do with it. Because the name Jacob is not a good name. Actually. And now I kicked them off. Now we're bringing back on. Sorry. We will have a Zoom account next week, I promise, actually. So. Alrighty, there we go. We're all situated now. Okay, Jacob, I wrote it up on the board. The name Jacob means schemer. Schemer. What's a schemer? Someone who tricks people, right? Yeah, someone who schemes. Thanks. What's a scheme?
It's
a Ponzi scheme. Yeah, there you go. Pyramid scheme.
An evil plan.
Yeah, there you go. An evil plan, right? Yeah. Okay, very good. Very good. I'll roll with that. So, and I'll show you the... Goodbye, Marcella.
Bye.
I'll show you the biblical basis for his name, too. If you go to... Genesis 27, 36. So this is after... So you guys remember the story of... I'm going to read the story here in a second. But Jacob basically tricks all of his family into giving him the blessing. And what does Esau say after he tricks him into giving him the blessing? Verse 36. Yep, exactly. Yep. But verse 36, Esau says this, and he says, "Is he not rightly named Jacob?" Right? He's implying that, like, there's a meaning behind the name Jacob, and that name is schemer. Right? So Esau's basically saying, yeah, he got the right name. It'd be like a guy, like, nicknamed Liar, and then he lies, and you're like, well, that fits, you know, right? That's Jacob being named Schemer. And so you'll see that as kind of like, it's kind of his name, and it kind of is a personality trait that follows him. So let's look at one of his schemes real quick. Genesis 27, we'll start in verse 1, and I'm going to kind of hopefully... deal with this. And so here's a fun thing. We're going to look at this. This is kind of interesting to me. Whenever you find something in the Bible like this, you can learn a lot about people through these stories. So if Jacob's a schemer and deceives people, guess what? You can kind of learn a lot about people that are schemers and deceivers by studying Jacob. Makes sense, right? So we are going to look today at Jacob and kind of break down a couple things about, like, what it looks like to be a deceiver. How do they operate? How to kind of detect if someone's lying to you, deceiving you. Good things to have, right? No one ever lies during your day-to-day life, does it? Never, no. Like politicians, you know, you're paying attention to a politician, they never lie, do they? They never scheme?
No.
No, never. No. So it's like when you're, you know, anybody have, like, grandparents that, like, fall for, like, stupid stuff all the time? I also bad. Like, I'm pretty sure my grandma gave, like, $20,000 to, like, try to fight Obama to some, you know, like, when, like, it's, like, a lot. Like, you know, like, they, like, fall for those schemes and, like, you know, or like, even politicians, you know, people fall for stupid politicians all the time, and you're like, how do you not see that, right? So we're going to look at some things today about how you detect that, and then we'll do a couple things. So let's read this story now. Start in 27, verse 1. And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, that he could not see. He called Esau, his eldest son, and said unto him, "My son," and he said unto them, "Behold, here am I." Okay, so first of all, who's Isaac? Let's remember our biblical characters.
Abraham's son,
right? What's one of the things we talked about when I was here last? What's Isaac's deal? Does anybody remember, like, what he does, anything cool he does?
He was in Abraham's promise.
Yeah, he was a part of that. Yeah, he's the one that went up on the mountain to get sacrificed. Yep, he's the one that like came down and got married. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's part of Abraham's thing. Yeah, and then he was the seed that was promised to Abraham. Yeah. Good job, Keaton.
Yeah.
Right on you. I'm proud of you. Word. So that's Isaac. So kind of know who we're talking about now. Kind of we're jumping back in time, wibbly wobbly a little bit. We'll get there. So he's called in his son. So he's old. He's about ready to kick the can, right? He can't even see at this point in time, and so Isaac is calling in Esau because he wants to give him his blessing, right? Back in the day, that was a big deal. The first son gets the blessing, so that's why he called Esau. Esau's the first son, right? Verse 2, and he said, "Behold, now I am old. I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons and thy quiver and thy bow, and go out to the field and take me some venison." Which, what's venison, all of you cowboys? Someone? Deer. Yeah, it's like deer. Yeah. So, FYI, he wants his kid to go shoot him a deer and like cook him up some meat as his like dying wish. It's a real man right there, you know what I mean? Right? So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, right? So that's what he wants. Verse 4, "And make me savory meat such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die." So he's like, "Hey, I'm going to give you the blessing. Just bring me some tasty meat first, and then I'll give you a blessing." And I get it. It's very reasonable. So, verse 5, here's the thing. "And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son, and Esau went into the field to hunt for venison and to bring it." So you got to realize Rebekah is Isaac's wife, right? And she likes who more, Esau or Jacob? She likes Jacob, yep. So she hears that Esau's going to get the blessing, and she's like, "Oh, no, I can't let this happen." So what'd she do? "And Rebekah spake unto Jacob her son, saying, Behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau thy brother, saying, Bring me venison and make me savory meat, that I may eat and bless thee before the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. Go now to the flock and fetch from thee from thence two good kids of the goats, and I will make them savory meat for thy father, such as he loveth. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, that he may eat, and that he may bless thee before thy death." So we see Jacob do this, right? He goes and he grabs a kid, you know, like a goat, basically kills it. So instead of going out and hunting, Jacob's off hunting off in the woods somewhere, or Esau's off hunting on the woods somewhere, and Jacob just goes to the farm and grabs one and is like, "Okay, I'll kill this thing," right? And so he dresses it up, but he's a little concerned. He says, you know, "Hey, mom," verse 11, "and Jacob said to Rebekah, Esau is, my brother is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man." You know, I understand that a little bit too well, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, you know, like, I'm just trying to think, like, you know, I'm trying to think, who's a hairy guy? I think it was, like,
Bill Tillman.
There you go. Yeah, Bill Tillman. Yeah. It's like me trying to masquerade as Bill Tillman. Is anybody that even, like, even if you're blind, like, I mean, let's be real, like, he can grow a real beard. You know what I mean? So Jacob was like, "Yeah, that ain't going to work, Mom." And she says, verse 13, "And his mother said unto him, Upon me thy curse be, thy son, only obey my voice and fetch me them. And he went and fetched and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory meat, such as his father loved." So she cooked up the whole deer, right? Verse 15, "And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on upon Jacob her son, and she put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands, and upon the smooth of his neck, and she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob." So literally she like takes the skin, like all the furry hair of these animals, and puts it on him, so that he's like now hairy like his brother, and then puts his clothes on him, because I'm imagining, you know, this, like, I'm basically just picturing like a basically metrosexual little dude, and then like, I'm sure that's not what it looked like, but then a big hairy Esau, right? So he puts on these big beefy clothes that probably like smell musky, you know what I mean? Like Jacob's probably got like dainty hands, you know, he's just like working inside of his mom, but Esau is like, you know, musky, so he has to put on his clothes so he smells right, and then he like puts on these big hairy things on his arms so he feels right, you know. Verse 18, "And he came unto his father and said, Here am I," and his father asks, "Who art thou, my son?" And Jacob said unto his father, "I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat my venison, that thy soul may bless me." And Isaac said unto his son, "How is it that thou hast found so quickly, my son?" And he said, "Because the Lord thy God brought it to me." So, I mean, first thing here, and this Bob will always talk about this too, but when someone's lying, a lot of times they'll bring God into the lie. I mean, I was growing up all the time, you know, I can't think of a good example, but you run into people that say, well, God just called me to do this, or God called me to do that, or God called me to whatever. If I had a nickel for every time that, you know, there'd be like a guy that's, you know, we've had people at Old Pass before too, where, you know, they think they're pretty hot stuff, and so they'll say, you know, God called me to preach at this one random place, you know, but they're not doing everything right. And, you know, it kind of goes back to, what is it, God has three plans, right? He's never going to call you outside of his plan for people. He's never going to call you outside of his plan for the universe. And so, you know, but people get this thing and they'll say, well, God called me to do this. And so, you know, just because someone's talking about God doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing it out of the right heart attitude. I mean, heck, are all of our politicians, do you really think, you can like Trump all you want, do you really think he cares about God? No, he doesn't give two hoots. 2 Corinthians, my dude, you know, that picture with him taking the picture with the Bible, just standing there. You know, like, it's like my favorite picture, it's so funny. But no, there's no way that he gives two hoots about it. It just gets him voters, right? That's all that matters to him. And so, verse 21, and Isaac said unto Jacob, come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not. And Jacob went near to Isaac his father, and he felt him, and he said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And so, I mean, that's pretty, kind of one of the simplest ways to detect, right, if someone's deceiving you, right, is that their hands don't match their voice, right? Their walk doesn't match their talk. You know what I mean? Going back to the politician analogy, right? They deceive you all the time by, right, promising one thing, and then by the time they've like finished their role as chair or whatever, governor, whatever, I forget everything about the government all of a sudden. But, right, they finish that, right? Have they ever done any of it? No, they'll never do any of it. Or, you know, I mean, this is like, I mean, in real life, right, there's that person that is your best friend, right, but then they talk behind your back, right? That's showing you that you're getting deceived. There's the, you know, the girlfriend that says she's fine, you know, and then, the knife behind her back says differently. I don't know about you girls, the chick that says she's not into drama. Yeah, right? Yep, there's always that chick that says she's not into drama, but then she's the one that starts it. You know, or I have my sassy analogy of someone who likes coffee but only goes to Starbucks, you know, ayo. Yeah? Hey, no, it's fine. It's all right. We got time yet. You're still in youth group for a few more years. I think a funny analogy is, too, that there's this old, like, business, like, advice that if you're ever, like, around business people, someone's going to tell you this story sooner or later. And it's this idea that, you know, golfing, you know, you always see business people go golf, right? Like Trump and all those dudes, they're always off golfing, right? And they'll say that it's for a real purpose, because they'll say however someone plays the golf game is how they are as a business person. And so there was this famous story of a guy that was golfing with this dude, and his wife sees the guy, like, move his ball a little bit into a better spot or something like that. And so, you know, his wife tells him, hey, this guy just cheated at golf. And then the guy goes, well, it's just golf, no big deal. And she's like, no, you can't go into business with this guy. And so anyway, long story short, he does. And they find out, you know, a couple years later that he was stealing millions of dollars from this business, right? So what's the point there? Is someone whose walk doesn't match their talk, right, is someone you've got to be wary of. And so that's kind of the simple takeaway from this story. And so you'll see throughout the rest of the story, I'll just kind of summarize for you, right? That he deceives his father, he gets the blessing, right? And as soon as Jacob's leaving the tent flap, like Esau walks in, like with this like freshly made steak and is like all proud of himself, right? And then all of a sudden they like all realize that they gave the blessing to Jacob instead, and they're all pissed. and so I want to walk through real fast a couple things. The results of this deception. 27 verse 41, Elena quoted it earlier, right? And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said, "In the days of mourning for my father are at hand, then will I slay my brother Jacob," right? So, first thing, and this is just in our own life, whenever you deceive someone, whenever, you know, maybe we're not Jacob's level, right? Maybe not, we're not gluing on dead animal carcasses to try to fool our dad into a blessing, but, you know, we deceive people sometimes, right? Either people around us or, you know, there's sometimes where you'll be around, you know, might lie to your parents a little bit, fib just a little bit, just a tiny bit. Yeah, I cleaned my room. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, you know, something like that. You know, and so the number one, right, the first result of that deception was that it damaged his relationships, right? Jacob now basically lost his dad and his brother because they hate his guts now because he stole this thing from them. You know, this is like lying to your friend, you know, cheating at video games, right? You know, people struggle to play with someone that cheats because, right, it's frustrating. Exaggerating stories behind someone's back, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know about you guys, but whenever you tell a story and you, like, kind of dislike the person, you might just make it a little bit meaner than it needs to be. You know, might leave out some of the information that makes them seem more reasonable. You might, or, right, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm talking subtle stuff, right? But it damages relationships. Secondly, it came back to bite him. You know, if we carry on into this story, you'll find that, anybody remember the story of Laban and his two daughters?
Yeah.
What happened to Jacob?
Basically, Jacob was trying to marry Rachel.
Right? Or no, Rachel. Yeah, Rachel.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm our names. Dyslexia. Thanks.
And then he had to work for Laban for like 7 years. And then at the wedding, Laban said that he would have to marry Leah first because the firstborn has to be married before the second can. So then Jacob had to work another 7 years to get Rachel, and then he ended up with two wives.
Close, yes, exactly. Except for it wasn't at the wedding. It was, he woke up the next morning and it wasn't Rachel, it was Leah, right? So, and if you didn't get the analogy, it's right, they did what married people do, and then he woke up the next morning and it was light outside, and all of a sudden he realized that's not who I was supposed to marry, right? And so, you know, this is a PG-13 day, I'm sorry. But yeah, you kind of think it's interesting how, you know, Jacob deceived someone in swapping the firstborn and the secondborn and to get something for himself, and then later on in his life, the exact same thing turns around and happens to him. Kind of interesting. That's kind of the way it works. I don't know if any of you guys have had that situation where you know, when you do something deceptive, sometimes it comes back to bite you, right? Like, and kind of turns around. I don't know if you've ever had that happen, maybe in your own life. I'll let you kind of think of your own examples. Third thing, it stressed him out. So he was going back into chapter 32, kind of going back to where Esau was. And, you know, he's super anxious about, you know, this is years and years and years and years have passed at this point in time. He has to go back. God has called him back into the land where Esau's at. And they've, what does it say? Verse 7. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, right? He's freaking out that he has to go back and see Esau again because he thinks Esau's going to kill him. And so he, like, literally divides up his people so that he's like, okay, half of my family's going to go here, half of them are going to go here, so that when he comes to kill me, half of us live at least. You know, he can't kill us all. That's how stressed out he is. And so this is that, you know, same thing in a deception, right? You know, when you deceive someone or you're deceptive, it stresses you out, actually. It's a lot of work. I don't know if you guys have ever realized that. Have you ever, like, lied or something to, like, your parents, and then now it's just, like, you're miserable for the next week because you're just, like, scared they're going to find out? Or, you know, if you told a lie and it just, like, seemed like that thing kept coming up and you had to keep, like, doubling down and keep lying more and more just to keep covering up the first one, it's stressful, right? It's anxious. It's not fun. Fourth thing, right? It prevented him from getting the Lord's blessing. So let's look at this, and this is kind of where I want to sit here at the end. We're pretty close. But Genesis 37, verse 31. Flip with me. Or not 31, 24. And this is the story where Jacob literally wrestles with God. In verse 24 it says, "And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. Verse 26, and he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. Excuse me. There I go. Verse 27, and he said, what is thy name? So God asked Jacob, what is thy name? What is thy name? And he said, Jacob. So now, knowing what we know about the name Jacob, what's kind of important about God asking his name? Right? If your name is Liar, and God asks you what your name is, right? What does it mean if you kind of confess your name? You're like, well, Liar. Right? And so when Jacob says that his name is Jacob, he's admitting what he is, right? He's admitting that he's a schemer. He's admitting that he's a deceiver, right? And so, but then if you look, verse 28, once he admits that, and he said, called, thy name shall be no more, called no more Jacob, but Israel. For a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And so God blesses him. So, kind of an interesting thing that, right, it wasn't until that he kind of admitted what he was doing wrong and came clean with himself that God blessed him. And so the exact same way when you deceive yourself, when you're in that spirit of deception, when you're lying, right, it prevents you from getting the Lord's blessing. Sin separates us from God. It's as simple as that, right? And so then eventually, it affects the way around him people act as well. And I'll read this really fast. You go to Genesis 37, run, right? What did they kill? What did Jacob kill to be the hair on his arms? A kid of the goats, right? Verse 31 of Genesis 37. When his kids want to deceive him about killing Joseph, what do they use? Verse 31. And they took Joseph's coat and dipped and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. Right? So it comes back to bite him still, even what, I don't know how long, 50 years later, something like that, long time later. And so, You know, you guys might not have kids yet, but have you ever thought about that, you know, the people around you might get affected by the way that you act? I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever faced like a cheater in a video game, but as soon as you see someone cheat, what are you doing? You're like, oh, I'm all no holds barred. I'm totally screen peeking now, you know, because this guy's cheating off me. Or, you know, if you've ever hung out with someone that lies a lot to like make themselves seem cooler, you know that they're like talking up stories because they just want people to think they're cool, right? And then what do? You start talking your stories up too to try to compete with them, right? And so this is something where the way you carry yourself affects the people around you. So I want to now kind of, I don't know. That's the low-level, boring, still good Bible, blasé stuff. Now I want to get to the cool stuff. And this is pretty simple, but okay, so like you guys know on like National Treasure, you guys ever watch that movie? Where he's got the glasses with the different like things that you can flip the different color on to see the different color ink, right? You know, so that's what we're doing now. We went through kind of the like, you know, lame-o boring message, but we want to flip down a couple goggles now and actually see some of the more interesting stuff. And so, you know, let's kind of turn this around and look at us. And all of you kids are good kids, right? All of you kids are great kids. You know, the fact that you're here on a Thursday, right? This means a lot to me. It means that you're working towards being closer to the Lord. This is great, right? But I'm guessing that all of us, including the leaders, right? Everybody in this room has something that, you know, they are, you know, could improve on, right? I'm guessing everybody in this room has something that they could probably cut out of their life that would just make their life a little bit better. I'm guessing everybody in this room is like, you know, there's always something to cut out to knock you to the next level, right? You know, we're all still a couple steps below Christ, right? At least a few. So it seems like there might be something for us to cut out. And so, you know, I bet in some way there's some small sin holding us all back. Just, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, but I'm guessing there's some small sin that's holding us back. And so I bet if you could get rid of it, your life would be better. And so the issue is what we do is we kind of like are like Jacob. Where a lot of times we lie to ourselves about who we really are. And it took, right, Jacob admitting that he was a schemer before God would bless him. And so now the question is turning it back on us. What are our failings that we don't admit to ourselves, right, that are holding us back from the blessing of God? So that's where we're going to take this a little bit further. You know, the, what was it? I just think we don't apply stuff to ourselves all the time. If I'm going to flip to, was it 2 Samuel 12? Flip with me there, if you wouldn't mind. This is, there's the, an exact point, of an exact version of what I want to kind of explain to you in David. You guys all remember the story of David, right, with Bathsheba? You guys remember that story? We talked about it, like, what? The last time I was here, right, where he, there's the lady on the roof, and it was a couple weeks ago, right? Lady on the roof, you know, he killed her husband, took her as a wife, that kind of stuff, right? He didn't feel bad about it at first. He didn't admit to himself how terrible he was. But look at chapter 12, starting in verse 1. And so David's now committed this terrible thing. Verse 12, and the Lord sent Nathan unto David, and he came unto him and said unto him, there were two men in one city, one rich and the other poor. Now, if you guys are a little slow, it's talking about David and Uriah, right? David's the rich one, Uriah is the poor guy, right? So, the rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing save one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up, and it grew together with him and with his children. It did eat of his own meat and drink of his own cup and lay in his bosom, and was unto him as a daughter. And there came a traveler unto the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress the wayfaring man that was come unto him, but took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was come to him. So there's this, he's basically giving like a kind of a story, right? He's talking to David and he's saying, hey, imagine this guy that only had one lamb, right? That was like his world. He cared for that thing, you know, he had like pictures of it on the background of his phone, you know. He like pet that thing every day, you know, it was really cute. And then so this rich guy had hundreds and hundreds of lambs and all those things. And someone's coming into town and they're like, oh, I'm hungry. And he takes and kills the other guy's sheep instead of one of the hundreds he has. So that's the story he's giving. And so what's David's response to that? And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man and said unto Nathan, as the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die, and he shall restore his the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity. So David's pissed, right? He hears the story about this dude killing this other guy's lamb, and he's mad about it. He's ready to kill this dude. In verse 7, right? And Nathan said unto David, thou art the man. Thou art the man. He basically says, hey, David, it was an analogy. I was talking about you the whole dang time. And then you see this is now when David basically falls down and loses it and gets right with God. So, but here's the thing, right? This is the thing we do. A lot of us are like David, where we commit a sin, we do something wrong, we've got something in our life, right? But then we don't apply that. We don't apply the principles we already know to ourselves. That's the cool thing about everybody in this room is that you already have 90% of the Bible principles you need to live a good Christian life, just by the fact that you've been under this church for a while. But it's not about that you have the principles, it's that you apply those principles to yourself. You know, and so, kind of going back to the analogy, right? What is the thing that, like David or like Jacob, that I'm doing that I'm not admitting? That thing that's holding me back from the blessings of God, and I'm not dealing with it or not working with it because I'm not admitting to myself that I have that issue. You know, I think of all the time, you know, pretty plain and simple, right? That I hear people all the time say, I don't have time to read my Bible, right? I hear that all the time. Like, every week I hear someone say, oh, I just don't have time to read my Bible. Okay, well, I mean, here's my list of things to do for the day. I want to get my nails done. We're going to cure cancer. We're going to eat ice cream. What else am I going to do? Rescue a kitten. And we're going to nap. Okay, right? So, you know, if I'm looking at my daily list of things to do, right? You know, would I wake up in the morning and go, you know what, I'm going to start off with the nap. And then I'm going to eat the ice cream. And I'm going to get my nails done. And if there's time, I'll cure cancer and rescue a kid. Right? We would never do that. But, I mean, how often do we make Bible the thing that lasts till the end of the day? I'm guilty of that. I know my Bible time is often at the end of the day. It happens. But I get that. But the reality is, why you do the things in the order that you would do them? Because they're in the order of importance. You naturally do the order of importance in your life. And so, a lot of times, if Bible's not a priority, if it's not something you're actually getting in, if you don't have time for it, it's because it's not a priority to you. And so that's the thing that you would need to then work with God on and say, you know what? I'm not a schemer. I'm a whatever. I don't prioritize the Bible. And then once you admit that, right, now the Lord can help you with that. Now you can get on that next level. I like, this is my TV test, right? There's a lot of times when life where I'm like, man, I'm maxed out. Whew, holy cow, there's a lot going on, discipleship groups, all that crazy stuff. But then, I still have time every single night to sit down and watch Gilmore Girls or something, you know what I mean? Right? Right? Guess what? Are you really at max capacity if you have time to sit on your phone for an hour every day or watch TV? You're not, right? I mean, think about it. If this was your parents, take the Bible out of the picture, right? If your mom told you to clean your room and you said, oh, no, I don't have time, and you go downstairs and sit on the TV, what do you think is going to happen? you're good. Yeah, La Chancla is coming out, right? right? Yeah, you're going to get whooped. But, the exact same thing, but we do that exact same lie to God. And I'm not necessarily saying that, this is not a beat yourself up situation, but it's to be honest with ourselves situation, right? We can say something along the lines of, like, those friends don't influence me. But could someone looking in tell that I'm any different than them? I mean, really, like, are you any different than your friend group at all? Like, if someone didn't talk to you just by the way you act, chances are you probably listen to the same music, you watch the same TV shows, the same you dress the same way, you act the same way, you say the same curse words, right? You say the same dirty jokes or laugh at the same dirty jokes, right? That's one of those things where are you going to be honest with yourself and say that, maybe those friends actually do influence me more than I want to admit? Or, I'm not sinning. There's a lot of times in life where you can kind of convince yourself that you're, we're walking close to the line, but we're fine, we're not as bad as that guy. I'm not coveting, or I'm not, I always think about like the girls whenever I was growing up, the girls I hung out with were kind of nasty. They were dumb girls, but they always had like shirtless guys as their background pics, And so you're just like, but they were fine with it, right? And you're like, I'm not coveting, he's just cute, he's a cute guy or something like that, it was always like, growing up, this is like Christian girls I'm talking about, but it's like, oh, he's just cute, it's not a big deal, I'm not really sinning, I'm not doing anything wrong, he's just cute, or, I think about how, the TV shows that we watch, right, like, it's not that bad, but if you boil down a lot of times what your actual heart attitude is, like, why are you watching the things you watch, why do they appeal to you? Why is that show interesting to you? I think of the TV show, I'm not calling out anybody out, right? But just think about the TV show Outer Banks, right? What's the reason most people, at least most dudes, are probably into that show, right? Is it because of the thrilling story? Or is it because there's 15 half-naked people in it, right? Let's just be honest. This is all about being honest with yourself and looking at these times. And this is something, as I've been putting this lesson together and going through, just trying to figure out, why do I actually do the things I do? Where are the ways, like Jacob, that I'm not admitting are my real motivations for the things that I'm doing? I'll sometimes tell myself that, I've prayed enough today. Like, I deserve to listen to music on the car ride home or things like that. But often, why am I doing that? Why am I convincing myself that I don't need to pray more, right? Why am I have that hard attitude? I'm just thinking of dumb examples here. But whatever it is, I can't give examples for everybody because everybody's got little tiny things that they're working on all the time. And a lot of times, that's the whole point of this lesson, you don't even realize it. But it's something that we need to do in our day-to-day lives. We need to dig for whatever that is. Figure out that thing that we're like David on, that we're just totally like, committing evil and we don't even think about it, right? I think a good example, and this is my kind of my leaving off advice, right? What did Nathan do to get David to see what he was doing that was stupid? He like got David to like zoom out and put it in like a third party perspective, and then all of a sudden David realized how terrible that was, right? And so I think about like in my own life, Imagine you are giving advice to someone else out of the principles that you know from the Bible. Imagine you're giving advice to someone else on your own life, right? So, like, imagine the things that you struggle with. Imagine someone came and asked you, you know, hey, like, I really want to have a good testimony, but, you know, my friends at school are always cussing and getting in trouble. What should I do? What would you tell them?
Break up.
Yeah, exactly. What would you tell them, right? The biblical principle would be get new friends, right? But then how many of us don't turn around and apply it to ourselves and get better friends? You know, or if someone said, hey, I don't feel close to God, what would you tell them? Open question to the room. What advice would you give them?
Read
your
Bible.
Huh? Read your Bible. Read your Bible, right? Yeah, exactly. Who else? Anything else?
Start praying.
Yep. What else?
Go to church.
Yep. Yep, all these things. Now, turn it back around, right? If you're not feeling close to God, what are the things you probably should be doing? Yeah, you know what I mean? Picking up what I'm putting down? Or, you know, if someone came and asked you, like a new Christian baby said, hey, what do I have to do to be a good Christian? What would your answer be? You know, like, what are the things it takes to be a good follower of Christ? And now, turning back around and put it back on yourself, right? Often I find that the advice I would give to other people is a lot more strict than the advice I give myself all the time, right? You know, we cut ourselves a lot of slack, but not other people, right? And so, I don't know, it's just an analytical tool, just in your own life, just think about the things that you do, and if you saw someone else doing the things you do, would you be like, hey, brother, that's stupid, you know? Yeah, man, like, you Hermosillo boys have it easy, because it's like, just imagine one of you did the thing that you do, right? If Quentin did what you did, would you bop him upside the head for it? You know what I mean? Yeah.
He's doing good things.
I think sure.
Yeah. But right, you see what I'm saying? Or you can kind of take yourself out of the picture and look at it analytically with the principles that you already have. You don't even have to get new principles. Right? A lot of you probably know the right thing to do, but it's just about turning around and applying it to yourself. So, okay. We're done. We're good.